Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNRadio.com/Behind the Badge.
WGN Radio, Wintrust Business Lunch. By the way, speaking of your money, we were talking about the cost of weddings, and $28,000 is the average nationally. California, $33,000. I haven't looked up Illinois. It does not include the cost of a wedding ring. 630 said, would never have a big wedding again. We spent $20,000 for some reason. Go to the courthouse. 773 said, we were in debt for a long time after our wedding. Would not do that again. John, don't think I'd attend a wedding if I had to pay for my own food or drinks. I would just send a small gift. Yeah, no kidding. John, for how many guests is the average cost of a wedding in Chicago and the burbs? Yeah, we got to do some homework on that. I know that everything has gone up now because everybody was backed up for 2 years, and now it's supply and demand. So venues and bands and bartenders and everything is more expensive for a wedding. A lot of us have been talking about that. And maybe you are inviting fewer people to the wedding as a result. Paul, do you have any wisdom on this? It's not normally what we ask you about, but here's our friend Paul Nolte. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. Yeah, that was an interesting curveball to get things started, but I have one daughter that's married, and we had a wedding at the Lions Club down in Rolla, Missouri, and that actually worked out very well for everybody and had a great time.
Yeah, well, because I would imagine Rolla, Missouri is a more economical place to have a celebration as well.
We brought a lot of stuff from Chicago, though. But it was much more economical.
The destination weddings are the ones that will just kill you. And by the way, by kill you, I mean have a wonderful time, but just be a little more expensive than the local wedding celebrations. Rolla isn't exactly Mexico or Europe.
No, it's not. It's a nice place to visit and not a bad place to live either.
Yeah, no, I'd imagine that too. Speaking of the ways and places that we're living, you said that the markets are hopping up and down like Peter Cottontail.
Yeah, and in celebration of Earth Day, they're all coming back to Earth this week as well. So we've gotten a big drop in the markets most of this week, and a lot of it is revolving around higher interest rates. The Fed has been out on the rubber chicken circuit the last couple days and talking about how much they're going to be raising interest rates. And they're going to be quiet now until May when they make their final decision. But yesterday, Chair Powell indicated, yeah, maybe we're going to raise it 0.5% at the May meeting, and the door is open for another half in the meeting that follows.
What's your interpretation of that?
He is sounding a lot more like Paul Volcker in the 1980s when he was slaying inflation, and Volcker was very comfortable raising interest rates and did a number on the economy as well, but ultimately killed inflation. If you remember back at that point, we're talking about inflation now being at levels that we were at 40 years ago. 40 years ago, interest rates were at 10%, not 3%. So if you want to make that comparison, interest rates need to be a lot higher than where they are today.
Doesn't it also seem like the economic forces right now are still anomalous, that it's supply chain based on a pandemic, it's a war in Ukraine, which isn't going to last forever. I have no idea what Ukraine means, but it just seems to me like some of these things are rather extraordinary and maybe not the same as what, you know, you're referencing 40 years ago.
No, that's true. And my argument is that there's a lot more demand that's out there. There's a lot more money that's floating around that's come out from both the federal government and the Federal Reserve as a result of the pandemic. And that has given a lot of people the wherewithal to buy stuff, to do things, to go places. And the demand is much higher than it has historically been coming out of a recession. That needs to calm down, and one way to do that, at least, is to start raising interest rates a bit. I don't know where that end game is, but I think we need to be drawing back now and trying to slow the economy so that you can match up supply and demand a little bit better, and that will go a long way to fighting inflation.
We're visiting with Paul Nolte. He's our wedding planner expert. Paul, listen to this, just a couple of quick texts about this. Hey, John, I went to my son's wedding, gave $350, went to a friend's son's wedding, gave $350 for the gift. They had cheap food and a cash bar. The groom's father could have easily given his credit card for the bar bill. We wanted to take our gift back. Hey, John, just been looking around recently for our family wedding. The venues want $8,000 to $10,000 just for the venue. No food, no beverage. They can keep it. And finally, you can tell the Paul Nolte's been to that town in Missouri because he called it Rolla instead of Rolla. However you said it right, Paul.
Well, that's where my daughter and her husband met each other at school down there. So we did spend a fair amount of time down there.
Yeah, sure you did. Well, I'm happy for them. I'm happy for you. The consumer sentiment or investor sentiment is pretty bearish right now, isn't it?
It is, and it's not hard when the markets are declining as much as they have. The S&P is down 7 to 9% year to date, and investors tend to be very linear in their thinking that the market's down 7 to 10 and it's going to continue this way forever. And so they've gotten very bearish. The good news is when investors tend to be very bearish, we can be very close to a market bottom, at least a short-term bottom. The thinking goes that if they're bearish, they've already done the selling, they're sitting on cash. So the next decision is not necessarily when to sell, but now that I have all the cash, when to buy.
We've all come to learn a tiny bit about this inverted yield curve. Catch us up on that right now.
That one's a little bit more technical. So usually when you when you're talking about interest rates, and we usually talk about the Treasury yields, the longer I give the government my money, I'm expecting more in return. So for a 10-year bond, I'm expecting more in the way of interest than if I give the money to the government for 2 years. And so that comparison between the 2 and 10 years, what a lot of investors look at, we look at very closely, the 2-year yield is essentially the same today as it is for 10 years. And very recently, there was a brief moment in time where the 2-year yield is actually higher than the 10-year yield. And what that is an indication of is that usually gets the clock starting for a recession. It's not a very good timing tool, but it says that somewhere out in the future, anywhere between 6 months and 2 years, and that's what I mean, it's not a very good timing tool, but there will be a recession that shows up because the Fed is in the process of tightening monetary conditions, and that will lead to a recession at some point.
Did the curve revert itself?
It did, and over the last few days or so, it's flattening back out again, and it's one of those that, again, we're in a very flat environment. We're so the fact that it's reverted is not nearly as significant unless it starts to get very steep again. But it's been flat, has been flat now for really the last 3 or 4 months. But the fact that it just went inverted for about a day or so, I wouldn't put everything on that one, but certainly the fact that it's flat is indicating a tighter monetary policy by the Fed.
We're talking to Paul Nolte on the Wintrust Business Lunch, portfolio manager at Kingsview Investment Management. So what should people be doing with their 401ks or the money they got in the bank, wherever their investments are? What advice do you have for them?
Well, we've been sitting on a little bit more in cash. We've been still investing in the market. There's still value in the market, and we think a lot of that value is more in the healthcare sector, the industrials, the material sector, consumer staples. And those are the parts of the market or companies that will tend to do well as inflation continues to go up. They're able to raise prices to their customers and make additional dollars. Where we've taken dollars away from is the technology sector, which has been on a tear really since the pandemic, has started to come off recently. And fixed income still is doing better than the stock market, albeit not terrific. But we'd like to have money really in short-term bonds. So we really don't want to extend maturities very long because we think, again, interest rates are go up. We can get better yields maybe 6 months out from now.
prices of everything seem to be up, and a lot of that seems to be tied to petroleum, either because petroleum's used to make them or transport them. Do you see any change in that anytime soon?
It's kind of stuck around that $100 level right now. We could see it get up to maybe $125. It's going to depend on whether the Fed is going to be successful in slowing the economy. We're hearing about people cutting back on travel. We're hearing some stories about I'm not going to be driving as much. Certainly the fact that I'm only going to work a couple days a week as opposed to 5 days a week and driving in is reducing that amount of energy that I use. The fact is the economy today is using a lot less energy than it was 30, 40, 50 years ago. So it doesn't require as much today. We don't think energy is going to be up at that $150 range that some people are talking about here.
Demand will be less. I just wonder if the progress of the war in Ukraine is going to dictate the cost of groceries and how long that's going to last.
It will to a certain extent. Certainly wheat is 20% of all global wheat comes out of the Russian-Ukraine area. So that is going to have an impact. The growing season here in the United States obviously will have an impact. So it's not something that is going to get fixed quickly by a Fed that's raising interest rates. But again, what we're hoping for, at least by doing so, is it will tamp down some of those spending, borrowing, demand that is pushing interest rate or pushing prices higher at this point.
One last thought from you. It's tough for people that have to take retirement assets out or cashing things in right now when the markets are down or not performing so well. But if people can hold on, they and we will get through this. In fact, in some instances, they're buying on the cheap. Is that a reasonably optimistic thing to say?
Oh, yeah. I think, you know, there will be a very good buying opportunity in the next year or two for the markets as a whole. I don't know how far down we go before we go back up again. If you look historically, we're in midterm election years. They tend to be poor for the markets, and it may last into the summertime. Once we get past the summer, the markets tend to do better, and from that point into the election. So, yes, you can find some good values here in the markets. You can find some very good investments. You're not required to buy today and sell tomorrow. You can buy very good companies and be willing to hold on to them for 2, 3, 4 years and do very well. So looking at those companies, picking your points, picking your prices, I think makes a lot of sense to have your shopping list ready.
From Kingsview, nice to talk to you again, Paul. Thanks for your time today.
We'll talk to you again soon. Thank you.
We've been talking on and off on the show today and through the Wintrust Business Lunch about the cost of weddings. 815 said, we're in the process of planning our 42-year-old daughter's first wedding scheduled for June 4th in Milwaukee. 125 people, buffet dinner with two choices for entree, beer and soda provided all night, cash bar otherwise, DJ for 5 hours. Between the money we said we'd give them and what they are paying, I'm guessing the total will be $18,000 to $20,000. I don't really want to know what the final number will be, says 815. 815, for 125 people, a full-on wedding like that for under $20,000, I think is actually pretty good. I'm not sure what you all are seeing. Jennifer Schonberger is a senior reporter at Yahoo Finance. Do you have a feel for that, Jennifer?
Hey there. Thanks so much for having me.
What do you think? $18,000 to $20,000 for 125 people. You buy the beer and the wine.
Listen, inflation is real, right? Prices are rising. And so whatever families need to do to try to offset that, if they need to get creative, I guess that's one way to go about it, right?
So April is financial literacy month, and you guys are writing about just some nuts and bolts, basic things that we all need to know about.
That's right. And I think, you know, just to take a step back, It's so important to know how to diversify your portfolio, especially right now, because as you guys said just before I came on, the Dow's down some 600 points today. We're having a bit of a bloodbath in the markets this week as the Federal Reserve is preparing to move again to raise interest rates next week. And after the Fed chair said that he wants to move swiftly to try to raise rates quickly and quell inflation. So all of this is just a reminder that it's so important to diversify your investments, to balance them out, because it guards against losing money when prices fall in value. And so you want to diversify between asset classes and within asset classes. Again, so if one moves down, the other counteracts it. So standard asset classes would be stocks, bonds, and cash. But then you've also got commodities, real estate, and the newest, digital assets, cryptocurrencies, that are other categories and can help level things out. And I'm happy to delve into what investors would need to do from there.
Yeah, well, I was just thinking that most folks are probably very comfortable with the concepts of stocks and bonds and cash. And then after that, I think they get nervous about actually including in their investment, in their retirement portfolio, those other classes. Would you agree with that? We're a little, I'm not a gambler, and it's too important for me to have money at the end of the game here. So I don't know that I want to get into cryptocurrency, and I'm not smart enough to know about gold or real estate.
So I think it's really going to depend on how old you are and what your goals are, because if you're farther away from retiring, then you have more runway to take on more risks. Because if you do end up losing money, you can make it back, but you also have the prospect of hitting a home run. Now, if you're closer to retirement, of course, you know, that's different. You would take more of those risk chips off the table. As far as digital assets are concerned, you know, generally we recommend like 1-2% tops exposure for the portfolio, because while it does offer diversification if used right, it is highly volatile, to your point. Now, you could invest in cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, which is the largest cryptocurrency measured by market capitalization, or Ethereum would be the second largest. And those, you can look at them as kind of investing in the underlying technology, the blockchain technology, right? Not just investing in a alternative currency, but you could look at this as the next phase of the internet and equate investing in crypto to investing in the internet in the early 1990s. So that's one way to gain exposure within crypto. Another would be what we call NFTs. I think that's a buzzword people probably are starting to hear a lot. That stands for non-fungible token. And it's essentially a certificate of authenticity for an electronic collectible. And it could be art, it could be music, it could be sports memorabilia. So depending where you get in on that, that could also rise in value as well. In fact, I just want to note that at Yahoo Finance, we are tracking a brand new cultural asset index. It's the first of its kind, and it's got close to 1,000 assets representing nearly $500 million in total market cap. And it's following some of the same things I talked about, sports memorabilia, trading cards, comic books, video games. So it's a way to try to measure the value there.
Did you call that a cultural asset class? What does that mean?
It's what we're calling a cultural asset index. And it's the first of its kind. And Yahoo Finance just recently launched it.
So like, will we track that like the Dow to know what the value generally is of these cultural things?
Exactly.
So does it have a number now? Like, what is the cultural asset index at right now?
So it follows close to 1,000 assets, and we've got just shy of $500 million in total market cap. So we've just launched it. So it's sitting right around that level right now. So we'll see what happens as things progress, because it's just been launched.
And so would then people buy an index fund that you know, mimicked the assets in that class?
We're not in charge of that. We've just created like the index that tracks it all. If you would want to actually go and invest in these sorts of things, you would need to go to probably one of these cryptocurrency trading platforms to buy into an index or an NFT, I should say, Coinbase just launched in beta. Coinbase is the largest cryptocurrency exchange in the U.S. They just launched in beta their NFT marketplace. But there are other places you can go, like OpenSea is a very big one that a lot of people use to purchase NFTs.
Well, you all in your piece this week said that it's ETFs that people should be thinking about more realistically. And I wish you would just talk a little bit about the difference between a mutual fund and an ETF.
Absolutely. So when we talk about ETFs, exchange traded funds, that does not pertain to crypto. Right there, you're looking at more traditional investments, stocks, bonds, different types of sectors within stocks, right? Energy, financials. You could also gain exposure to commodities there. You could get like a gold ETF, for instance. And an ETF is sort of a passive version of a mutual fund. So a mutual fund is actively managed by an investment manager who researches individual stocks across the market to invest in the ones that they think are going to perform best for clients. And the styles are going to vary. Some are going to be riskier than others. But with exchange-traded funds, and their expense ratios, I should note, are going to be a little bit higher on mutual funds. For exchange-traded funds, you're going to have lower expense ratios because they're not being actively managed by an investment manager. But they offer the same sorts of diversification benefits. So if you want to buy an ETF that mimics the Dow, or you want to buy an ETF where you get exposure to technology, you could do that. Or you want to buy one that focuses on value stocks or growth stocks. Mm-hmm. You know, it's mm-hmm. really ranges the gamut.
So I guess there's a little more risk in that you don't have professional management, but if you're comfortable enough saying, I think that the healthcare companies and pharma is going to do well in the next 10 years, I'll just skip the mutual fund NIC and just buy an ETF in that area, right?
You could. And I think the strategy, if you're going to want to diversify using ETFs, is to put your money in many different pots, right? You buy healthcare, but you also buy financials, and you buy energy, and you buy technology, so that, like right now, technology is not performing as well as it was earlier in this cycle, whereas energy is outperforming now. Consumer staples are outperforming. So if you have money in those other pots, then your net level is stable.
Jennifer Schonberger is a senior reporter at Yahoo Finance, finance.yahoo.com. You can see this little checklist of things that you and I ought to pay attention to on their website. And it's fascinating, this cultural index. So we'll talk more about that another day. Thanks, Jennifer.
Thanks so much for having me. Take care.
12:45, Wintrust Business Lunch. More business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The Naperville Plaza Shopping Center has been sold for more than $52 million. The 115,000-square-foot property at the corner of Gartner Road and Washington Street is being sold to Regency Centers, a Florida-based real estate investment trust. Crane says the sale appears to show an improving situation for suburban retail space. Chicago investment firm North Pond Partners acquired the shopping center during the height of the pandemic in 2020 for $36.5 million. The $52.4 million sale price is a 44% increase in value in just 16 months. Regency now owns 11 shopping centers in the Chicago area. The other properties include Melody Farm in Vernon Hills, Westchester Commons in Westchester, and Clyburn Commons on Chicago's Near North Side. Illinois just received another credit rating upgrade. It's the second time this year and the third increase after two decades without upgrades. Moody's Investors Services credits the state's solid tax revenue growth over the past year and also notes Illinois has shown a commitment to paying down pension debt. The move comes 2 days after Governor Pritzker signed a balanced budget. He says the credit upgrade means the state will pay a lower interest rate, saving taxpayers hundreds of millions of dollars in the coming years. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Back to Steve Alexander in the business of food.
Yeah, happy Friday to you, John. Happy Earth Day as well. You're probably old enough to remember this sound, John. People of a certain age will know that's an old-timey gas pump, and every ding meant another gallon was pumped, 100% pure gasoline complete with lead. Times change, though. The lead is long gone, and E15, a mix of 85% gasoline and 15% ethanol, made mostly from Midwest corn, will be available all summer this year, helping, says the president, with the cost of gas.
E15 is about 10 cents a gallon cheaper than E10.
The companies that make ethanol are hoping it becomes E15 all year with much wider distribution. But why not ditch petroleum altogether? There's a company in Geneva, Illinois, building truck engines that will run on ethanol instead of diesel.
A big rig like the one that's standing next to us here, if you're putting 100,000 miles on it in a year, you're probably saving something like $25,000 a year in fuel costs.
BJ Johnson is co-founder and CEO of Clear Flame Engine Technologies. He was on the National Mall recently during National Agriculture Week, sharing big plans for E100 engines.
Late this summer, that's when we're really going to kind of expand it into commercial fleets, getting it into professional drivers' hands and getting a sense of their experience with it.
BJ and his co-founder, Julie Blumreiter, came up with the idea while at Stanford, and then after years of research there and more at Argonne National Laboratory in Lamont, they think they found the answer. The diesel engine without the diesel fuel. He says the same workhorse engine that powers long-haul trucking and construction, agriculture, and more can work just as well with pure ethanol. And he gives big props to people in ag.
The agriculture community has done such an outstanding job for years leading the way on sustainability, often in a way that goes unnoticed. But now that sustainability is really not just a national, but a global priority, I think the sector is able to stand up and lead and say, hey, we know how to do this. That synergy and what the agriculture community offers is absolutely required in the fight against climate change.
If you want to know more, you can go to clearflameengines.com. From the farm to your belly, today is National Jelly Bean Day. John, I think you were talking about jelly beans a few days ago. No black ones, I think, I recall.
No, black is first, then red, or no, red is first, then black, then orange, you asked, then green, then yellow, then purple, then white, final answer.
Sounds like you're okay with any of them. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio. Matt Schultz joins us, Chief Credit Analyst at LendingTree, to talk about the gateway to overspending, Matt, which is what?
Buy now, pay later loans, which weren't much of a thing a few years ago, but now you find on practically every online retailer website that you can find. They're often an interest-free loan. You pay it off in 4 installments generally, but because they can be really easy to get, it can also make it really easy to overspend.
What percentage of people don't pay off that program in time?
About 42% of folks who say that they've had one of these loans say that they've paid late. That's a really, really big number, especially when you consider that late payments, delinquencies, have been generally really low across most other types of loans for the last few years.
I could see why people would do that without a credit card, though, because 4 payments, no interest. What does the interest kick up to if you're late?
Well, it really can vary by lender. And the truth is that a lot of these buy now, pay later lenders will also give you the opportunity to pay over a more extended period of time. And with those interest rates, they can be as high as 30%, rivaling any credit card that's going to be out there.
Give me some more numbers around this. How much are people over? What's the age? Can you break it down for us a little bit? What are they buying?
Yeah, absolutely. The most common thing that people are buying are clothing and accessories and shoes and that sort of thing. It really kind of started off mostly as a fashion kind of thing, but now we're also seeing people buy laptops, home decor, that sort of thing. And generally speaking, the folks who use these most are women, Gen Z, parents with young kids. That's generally who we're talking about. But as this phenomenon has spread, all types of consumers have jumped in.
I presume people lower income, more stressed these days, are more apt to fall into that, right?
They definitely are among the groups that are the most likely. But we also see a lot of folks At the higher income levels, doing that as well. That's one of the interesting things, and one of the interesting results of this becoming so popular. It's not just something for folks who may not have any other options. It's something that a lot of people are taking advantage of because they think it's a good thing.
Yeah, and then it's not, including people that make over $100,000 a year. I'm looking at the charts, and it's pretty surprising at LendingTree.com, LendingTree.com. Out of time today, Matt, but we'll click on the site. Thanks for the insight today.
Thank you for having me.